talking about the criminal justice reform package that was passed in Illinois this past week and policing in general. And with us next is a friend of the Karen Conti Show, Laura Scarry. She's an attorney here in Chicago. She's a partner with Deano and Scarry. She represents police officers in cases involving excessive force, deadly force, search and seizure, malicious prosecution, failure to train, and those types of issues. What makes her experience unique is that she has been a police officer for the city of Lake Forest. Welcome to the show. How are you doing today, Laura? Thank you for joining us.
I'm doing very well, Karen, and thank you for having me on your show tonight.
I want to go right to the phones because Susan and Gurney had this question for Senator Sims. I ran out of time, but I want to put Susan on. Susan, you have a question about basically about police morale, and you have a daughter or you have a son who's a trooper. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
What is your question?
Yeah, thank you for listening. I tuned into this program late, but my son brought this bill to my attention, and I can tell you he's extremely discouraged, has not been on the job very long, and just is very concerned about his ability to do his job appropriately, having one, if not two, hands tied behind his back now. I mean, these young troopers put their lives on the line every day, and before all this happened, before George Floyd, before the protests of last summer, I was concerned about his life before all of this, and now I'm especially concerned. And so my question is regarding the bill, and if you feel that Pritzker or our government is doing anything to take into account the morale and supporting these troopers and Chicago police or whoever, wherever they serve in Illinois, and keeping them engaged in their job. I mean, so many, they're leaving by the droves. So I would like for you to address that.
Sure.
and maybe have your comments.
Thank you, Susan. I'm going to just put you on hold here. And actually, Laura, this was the first question I was going to ask you. What is the state of police morale from your perspective, because you represent police officers almost exclusively? Tell us what you think this bill will do to the morale.
Well, I want to thank the caller for, having her son protect the citizens of this wonderful state, and this actually hits home for me personally, and I have no shame in telling you this. I too have a son who is involved in law enforcement, and he's a corrections officer, and he is going into the field of actually finding a job with a municipality. So this is somebody, my son, who has, he's been in a family of police officers. My husband has been a police officer for 30 years. So he knows all too well, you know, what is the state of policing in the state of Illinois today. So I can relate to the caller's concerns, because I too have those concerns, and you know, getting to the morale of police departments and police agencies throughout the state, you know, around the country for that matter, it is low. And anecdotally, we are hearing that police officers are leaving in droves. I don't know that to be the actual case. I know that police officers who are actually in a position to retire after 20 years, they're really looking closely at retiring at 20 years as opposed to staying on the job for 30 years. So I've had those conversations with police officers because they're wondering, you know, should we stay on? Is it worth it? Are we going to have the support of our municipalities, our government agencies? Are they going to have our back? And again, anecdotally, you know, we're hearing that these officers don't feel like people are having their backs. However, when we talk to our neighbors, when we talk to our coworkers, when we talk to our friends, we are hearing overwhelming support for our law enforcement officers. So there's this dichotomy of, you know, these officers feeling like people don't have their backs. But when I also hear conversations, like I said, with friends, coworkers, and our neighbors, people feel very strongly about the law enforcement community.
Well, and sorry to interrupt, but I want to get to, and I think you're right. And I know that in my community where I live, when the police walk down the street, they get a standing ovation. People from the restaurants, when they used to be open, would stand up and give them applause because we right. want them in our communities. And again, we see some really bad things going on with police officers. Those get all the attention in the world. The whole world is focused on those terrible videotapes that we have seen. But again, here's what I want to get to, because I hear what you're saying, Lori. You come from the exact background that you can understand what Susan is going through with her son being an Illinois State Trooper. But let's look at some of these changes, these proposed changes. I mean, can you argue that chokeholds are always bad? Can you argue that body cams should be mandatory at some point? Can you argue that police should be held to certain standards and get better training? Those, to me, are things and whistleblower laws for the police officers so they can feel free to report other police officers. Those, to me, are pro-police in a way. And right. there's some other provisions that I think I can understand why a police officer would be offended or be upset about this bill. But tell me what, in essence, in this particular package is something that the police officers are going, oh, gosh, this is not going to work for us.
Right. Well, I mean, you mentioned chokeholds. So I believe it was in 2016 that we had a law that was passed that prohibited chokeholds. So now in this package, you know, we've got the banning of restraints above the shoulders. Well, that's going to be a concern for police officers because in situations where officers are literally trying to prevent themselves from being injured, you know, let's say that there is an arrestee or a detainee that, for whatever reason, decides to go hands-on with that police officer. So now you've got an officer who, in the back of his or her mind, they have to think about, okay, I have to be careful about not going above, you know, the detainees' shoulders for in the event that I may be found liable or violating a state statute or violating a department policy. It's going to, I think, create a situation where officers may be injured more because, unfortunately, with these sorts of incidents where officers and detainees are hands-on, these situations are dynamic. And officers, they're going to do whatever they can to prevent injury to themselves while protecting the members of the public. And I just think it's going to require 2020 hindsight to look at these officers' actions. And I think it's a poorly crafted segment of this bill because it doesn't take into account the realities of what police officers go through on a day-to-day basis.
Lou, we're talking to Laura Scarry. She's an attorney here in Chicago who represents police officers. She used to be a police officer herself. And we're talking a little bit about this new reform package. If you have any questions for her, please give me a call here. I'll try to get you on right away. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about representing police officers and how difficult it is to make a jury understand the nature of what police officers do and the decisions that they have to make on a split-second basis. You're listening to Karen Conti on WGN. We're here with Laura Scarry, who's a Chicago attorney here and a former police officer, and we're talking about the new criminal justice reform bill and what are some of the problems from law enforcement standpoint. You took a look at the bill, or at least the bullet points of it. Are there certain provisions here that you have great concern about for police officers? And if you could bullet point a few of them, and maybe we'll have some time to discuss each of them. Oh, I'm sorry. Laura? Hi, Laura.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Are you there, Karen?
I'm here.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, I was able to take a look at some of the provisions of the police reform bill. And, one of the concerns that I have, not so much for police officers individually, but basically for our law enforcement agencies, and that's the amendment to the Law Enforcement Officer Worn Body Camera Act, because it's my understanding, based on a reading of the law, that it requires that all law enforcement agencies are to employ the use of officer-worn body cameras.
What's wrong with that? Because we did talk to Senator Sims about that, and according to him, police officers like body cameras and that it's good for both sides, the public and the police. Is that not the case among the police officers that you deal with?
No, I agree with that. I agree that the majority of police officers, they do like to have the body-worn cameras, because more often than not, the body cam footage, it exonerates the actions, or it exonerates the officers' actions that they've taken if there are complaints against the officers. The problem, though, is that although the cameras themselves may not be expensive, the initial purchase, I mean, don't get me wrong, they are expensive, because you make a one-time purchase, and depending on the size of the agency, we're talking about potentially tens of thousands of dollars. But it becomes expensive to store the camera or the video footage for the periods of time that are required by statute. And the storage, depending on the size of the agency, now we're talking potentially hundreds of thousands of dollars. And then when it comes to, let's say that these law enforcement agencies, they're receiving FOIA requests or requests under the Freedom of Information Act, and it's going to take individuals who are hired by our municipalities to go through that video footage, to redact certain video footage to keep out or to eliminate the faces of individuals who are irrelevant to whatever the request is.
So what you're saying is that the body cams themselves might be good, but the bureaucracy and the follow-up is going to be more detailed and more expensive than what the bill may have been anticipated. And
exactly.
That makes a lot of sense. And that you wouldn't know that unless you are a person who knows about police agencies.
That's right.
Laura, can we jump to the phone? I'm trying to get as many of these calls in. We've got John in Westmont. He's got a question about civil liability for police officers. Hi, John. Welcome to the show. You have a question for Laura?
Yeah, thank you. I've read a summary of the bill, and my understanding is that unsubstantiated, unverified complaints can make police officers civilly liable. First off, is that true?
I don't know. I did not see that it requires office or it makes officers civilly liable.
No, I didn't see that.
There's a provision in the bill where there's a section in the law that allows unverified complaints to be made against police officers.
So that was the change that I saw, John, which in the past, if you wanted to complain about a police officer, you needed to identify yourself and sign something. And I think what the law, from what I read, Laura is correct, that it basically allows anonymous complaints. And that doesn't mean civil liability necessarily. That just means probably an investigation will ensue internally against the officer for what has been alleged.
You don't know who it is. It's unsubstantiated. They can still, as an officer, be investigated and held maybe legally liable.
From an employment standpoint, right, Laura?
Right. I mean, and I think you're talking about the amendment that's made to the Uniformed Peace Officers Disciplinary Act. And it's true. They don't have to have a sworn affidavit anymore. That does concern me. And there's another section in the amendment where They deleted the section that states if an administrative proceeding is instituted, the officer shall be informed beforehand of the names of all complainants. So that's been eliminated, and I think that's a section that that you have some concerns with. I, too, have some concerns about that, because the way I read that is, you know, and if we're talking about a disciplinary hearing, to me, that's an administrative proceeding. It's going to be all the more difficult then for the individual police officer to establish his defense without knowing, you know, who the complainant is. And it's I see that as being very problematic.
John, thank you so much for the call. We got a lot of callers. I just want to get to them as quickly as we possibly can. We've got John in Libertyville has a question about the use of force. Hi, John. Welcome to the show. What is your question for Laura?
I'm concerned that no one brings up the fact that when you have a physically strong perpetrator like George Floyd, who was 6'4", 220 pounds, initially cooperating and then decides to not cooperate and uses his physical strength, it's very, very difficult to control a person like that because of their strength. Also, on the one in Kenosha, the individual that was shot while he had a weapon in his hand, he was hopped up on something, and it was his wife that called the police complaining about him. He pulled the taser out of his neck and continued fighting. Well, what is a person supposed to do with it? Finally, when you have a police officer that's reputable, which almost all of them are, they're sworn to protect us. I trust them. They have taken an oath. I trust them. I don't like to see somebody just attacking everything, trying to make the exception the rule. It's wrong.
John, thank you so much for your call. I'm going to let Laura address it very briefly. And I want to focus on the issue of taking into account the size and taking into account the emotions and perhaps the drug use and why tasers weren't working on Jason Blake, as we know from the Kenosha situation.
Yeah, those are, you know, unfortunately, these high profile incidents, they're the exception, right? And, you know, with respect to these officers, we do have to take into account the size. I mean, if there's a smaller officer, let's say 5'2", you know, 150 pounds, trying to subdue an individual who's 250 pounds and 6'3" and high on drugs, those circumstances are relevant to the level of force that any officer decides to use.
So, Laura, thank you so much for joining us. I'm so sorry. Sure. We had so other callers with great questions. I'm going to have to break, but you're going to come back and we're going to talk about some of these other issues and how this bill actually works out in effect. Thank you for joining us, Laura Scarry, partnership at Deano and Scarry here in Chicago. This is the Karen Conti Show.